From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we're building this backyard advantage, which is part of igniting the entrepreneurial revolution. And the backyard advantage is becoming the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. And it's based around this culture of love, right? Helping one another. And so today on the show, we are going to help you. We have Daniel Barnes. He's the author of Just Start. He is also an entrepreneur and the owner of Barnes Detailing. So we have a local entrepreneur who has been through the Sacramento Entrepreneurial Academy. Yeah. He's built a business, and now he's helping the next person in line. Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Hey, thank you so much, Mark, for having me. And I also have to give a huge thank you to both Rick Spencer and Jim Corbo for making the connections so that way this could happen. So,
yes.
And that's the, Jim is the president of the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy that met right here in Growth Factory. So it's pretty surreal to be here when this was the place that kind of started so many things.
Thank you. Well, okay. So Jim Corbett is an incredible entrepreneur. He's been highly successful in the mortgage business, sold a number of companies, and just a great guy. He's also a veteran. And I don't know if you know or not, but the Sacramento Entrepreneurial Academy is doing an event coming up. I don't even have the date now. I don't know if they're bringing in alumni or not, but I'm gonna be the MC for upcoming Sacramento's Got Talent.
Wow.
I think it's in December, so maybe November. I can't remember. Anyway, with that said, thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely.
And Rick Spencer, by the way, for you don't know, is my partner in the Growth Factory. He is the guy that runs our venture fund. An incredible human. So let's thank both of those guys for getting you here and for helping share your message. Yeah. And you know what? I guess I want to start by saying thank you, because when you walked in the door, two things stood out to me. Number one, you're dressed sharp, right? And I was like, wow, this guy is polished. Tell me about the outfit. This is part of your personal brand, I take it.
Yeah. So back in July, I went to this personal branding conference called the Forward Event, and it's actually for mortgage brokers and real estate agents, which I'm neither, and I plan to become neither of those things. But this idea of personal branding and going, what are things that are unique and outside of maybe my normal domain of expertise, but that could add significantly to it? That's really interesting to me. So I went, and one of the ideas was to have something that's basically have the courage to be disliked and take something that is unique about me, but then change it. So that way people would go, oh, that's distinctly Daniel. So for me, I have this thought process, which is 70% of what I wear ends up being business casual. So you see the suit, you see the like most of it's pretty normal, except for this.
The bow tie.
And so I cycle between a bow tie. I've got some really loud shirts that are like Monet, or like I've got a purple tie dye, like just some wild things where there's one distinct thing that you're like, that's so loud. And wow. I want that where people go, I love that he's like dressed well, but then is also just okay with having a little bit of fun.
That's the opposite of my wardrobe, which is usually the most underdressed guy in the room.
Hey.
Today, I'm actually dressed up. I normally wear like a cutoff t-shirt with cutoff sleeves. So you've caught me on a good day.
Well, but from what I remember too, though, you said something about wanting to be the fittest 85-year-old in Loomis, which I think is a wonderful, I'm not sure if that's
I have 23 years to get there, so,
dude,
you know, I'm a work in progress.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you. That stood out to me. And of course, you've written the book Just Start, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah.
But then, it's interesting, you knew that one of my visions was being the fittest 85-year-old, but you also know that my favorite restaurant is Bennett's, and I love it when a guest comes in and gives me a gift. Now you gave me, not only you gave me a book, but you gave me a meaningful gift, because my wife and I love to go to Bennett's. It's our favorite restaurant. And you must have heard that. You must have heard me promoting at some point. And if you haven't been to Bennett's, if you go there on a Monday night, you will probably see me at Bennett's. I should promote that more. I'm always at Bennett's on Monday night, usually around 6 o'clock. I'm usually having dinner in the bar and usually having one of their margaritas, which are fantastic. So,
what's your favorite margarita?
It's a regular margarita with salt, but they put, I think they put Casamigos tequila in there, which is kind of a mid-range tequila. Yeah. So that's my typical go-to when I'm at Bennett's.
That's
anyway,
awesome.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it. I'm going to get myself maybe an extra margarita this week. okay, so what prompted you to write the book Just Start? You've got this entrepreneurial business, and then now you wanted to share some of what you've learned and what you know, some of your wisdom. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So it really started for me having a conversation while I was just making dinner with a friend, and it was just kind of a normal day. We were making tacos, like just the most kind of mundane thing. But I realized that I had this fear almost, which was if I go, like I had some ideas of like, I wanted to write a book. I wanted to create things that would impact people's lives. But I had this sense that if I actually go out and create these incredible things, at some point in the future, I might make a mistake and then it would actually just nullify and take out everything that I had already created up until that point. And it was in talking with this friend of mine, Connor, that I realized that was a lie. I was assuming A, that I would actually create something meaningful, which is not guaranteed, and B, that there would be something that I do in the future that would destroy things, both of which could not be true. But I found that this really stemmed from this idea of being perfect, this lie of perfectionism, which is in order to become an author, to own a business, to travel the world, to do what I thought were these like pretty amazing things, that I had to be this perfect person. And as I've taken steps, what I realized is that I didn't have to have all the answers. In fact, it was here in Growth Factory at an event or at one of the sessions of the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy, Mark Randall was speaking. And for those who don't know, Mark Randall sold his company to Adobe for $400 million, done some really incredible things. And when he was speaking, he said a line that really has changed me, was the reason why I wrote this book. It's really kind of set up a lot of my life. And this is the line: every idea is a bad idea until it's been tested in the marketplace. And for me, as someone who had this internal challenge with perfectionism, I recognized maybe for the first time that these ideas were external. And so when I had the idea to start a mobile detailing business, I went, how would I test this? And how fast could I test this? It's a bad idea anyway. So it's okay to try, because it might fail. It's probably going to fail anyway. So it just released this, like, you have to have all the steps figured out ahead of time. I was very in that mindset. I'd done school, had to get straight A's in my brain, like 4.0, do everything perfect. Even though, ironically, I had taken Spanish classes, got only B's in Spanish, but then went and lived in Ecuador for 77 days, and it was an amazing experience. So it's like I recognized the fallacy that perfection didn't equal a better outcome, but I was still trapped by that. And when I heard that quote, and then I realized I can just have an idea, I can experiment, and just start. Like that, taking the action was where I would find out if it was good, if it was bad. But if I didn't take action, and for the way I started my mobile detailing business was exactly this. It was about 4 months after hearing that quote. And I just went, I don't know if anyone would pay me anything to do this. Most people would be like, write a business plan, do market research. I did none of those things. I picked the worst possible day. It was literally Father's Day. And I decided to knock on 30 doors. And because 30 is where any number becomes statistically significant from a statistical standpoint, and my brain just works that way a little bit. And I went, if I go and knock on 30 doors, I will then know if everyone says no, hey, it was a bad idea anyway, I validated there was a bad idea, let it go. Cool. And so I went out, knocked on 30 doors, and what ended up happening was an hour and a half in, I'm going, I got all no's, 17 no's. And I'm going, am I just wasting my time? Like, what am I doing? But each door that I went through, I refined my pitch just a little bit. And then Nick walks out and we have this conversation. And I go, hey, like, I'm a neighbor, I'm in the area. And he's like, oh, I've got this old Porsche 944. Like, I'd actually love for you to take care of that next Saturday. And then the, like, I could not have made this up. He Venmo'd me on the spot.
Wow.
For the work I was going to do next Saturday.
Perfect.
And so then I was like, huh, okay, that worked. And this is how little faith I had. I had bought zero products. I went, where am I going to find a vacuum? Like, none of the, like, the background stuff was figured out. I literally just went, this is a bad idea. Let me test it. Find out if there's demand. Once there's demand, I will go create the supply. I know I can buy stuff. That's not the end of the world. And so that was the way I started my detailing business.
I love it. So, and that led to the book. You know, it's interesting. The name of your book resonates with me. When I first started the podcast, now I've been doing this podcast for 10 years, started on as a radio show, and I haven't quit. And when the idea came up, I just wanted to help entrepreneurs. How could I help entrepreneurs? Oh, maybe I'll share the stories of entrepreneurs, people like you or really successful people that would share their wisdom.
Yeah.
Because there's a gap in the market at that time. I felt there was a big gap.
Yeah.
And I just decided to start it kind of on a whim. And I ended up finding myself to be really nervous. So I was like, because I had let's call it false bravado, where like, oh, you know, I'll figure it out. And ultimately, I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what I was going to do, but I was really nervous for the first few shows, but I'll say for the first year, I had this, I want to call it imposter syndrome. Like, oh, it's when you brought up being perfect, it's like, wait, I had built some security companies that were pretty significant. And sure. I thought I had a lot of things that I could offer personally, but I was kind of afraid to share them because I was hoping, because I wanted to be perfect when I shared them.
Yeah.
And I've discovered now that I don't need to be. I'm just going to be me. And some of what I say will resonate and is accurate. And then some of it is just like, it's kind of subjective. So just go for it. Just be you. And it's not as scary anymore. And yeah. I have to imagine that a lot of people don't start things because they have fear.
Yeah. Fear is a big part of it. One of the things that I have found to be so fascinating and honestly actually makes me physically angry is how many wonderful people don't actually express the things that they're really wonderful at, but they will compare themselves to someone else who's farther and say, my whatever I've done doesn't matter because that person has done more. And I just want to like shake you and be like, no, that's wrong. You're wrong. What you have done is significant. Yeah. And even if, like, even for me, it would be so easy for me to go, I haven't had any major exits. I have, like, so there's all these reasons why I could, quote, not share from where I am. But here's the thing. There is a 22-year-old guy or a 24-year-old who I was, mm-hmm. who hadn't started a business yet, who needed someone. Like, there were people on YouTube who I looked up to who did have businesses, who were showing me when I was that age that was possible. And so to some degree, I have recognized it's who am I not to share what I have done. Now, I'm not going to pretend that I know how to sell a company. Like, there are things that I don't know how to do that I haven't done. And instead of pretending that I have done these things, just going, here's what I have done. I have started multiple businesses. I have been able to travel the world because of that. I love art and museums. I've seen art in Budapest, in Istanbul, in the Getty, here around the local area at the Crocker, in SF MoMA, on Stanford's campus. And so there are these things where I've found beauty in all these different areas.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to share from the skill set that I do have. And I think one thing that you had mentioned in one of the podcasts that I was listening to kind of in preparing for this was you had mentioned how some people can't walk into a room and feel comfortable meeting new people, and that that is something that as I wrote this book, I became more clear on what my life message is. And the one thing that I know is there's this equation actually in chapter zero of the book. And I believe it's in chapter zero. Yeah, it's literally the first page, and it's the people over everything.
People over everything. Okay.
And that was the, which...
People are greater than everything. Yeah, you get the greater sign.
Greater than sign.
Greater or than sign,
if,
yeah.
If I say it in a... people over everything is the way I would say it, like if there weren't, but my, my brain thinks analytically. So to having that greater than sign actually, it probably messes some people up, but I think it, it connects with your idea of the backyard advantage so beautifully of, I have found, again, if I wouldn't have been in the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy, one of the people who was my first clients was Lori, who was a part of this, a part of the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy at the time, and her significant other, his vehicle, I've detailed every single month for over 3 years.
Oh my goodness.
And that, that one community now, I have multiple clients that I take care of monthly. There's probably a cumulative thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands of revenue just from that one connection.
Amazing.
And so that's just shows the power of, like, you might be like, ah, it's just one referral. How significant is it? Well, when you're back there every single month and you build in that one area, it's, it really matters.
Well, it's interesting. You know, people, some people have trouble showing up and interacting as you mentioned, but showing up is so important. And even if you show up, you know, and you're nervous the first time, the second time you're less nervous. And then I would say too, eventually, and I love how you have brought the show, the clothes that pop, right? The loud wardrobe, because it's okay to be different. It's okay to be great. It's okay to be trying hard in a social setting. It's okay. Give it a shot. That's what I think a lot of people do, is they set their standards at what everybody else is doing. Hi, how are you? You know, yeah, what college you go to, stuff like that. But I think it's okay to stand out. I actually think it can be extremely effective in finding your niche, and it sounds like you've done that. So you're saying your audience, I'm taking it as your audience is more young, Gen Z. How would you describe your audience?
So there's two different, I guess, segments that I've realized I really speak to. One is an expert in their field who has 3 or more years of experience, and now is at the point where they're saying, wow, I really need to share a little bit about my expertise. So that's what I would quantify as the expert. So I have, for example, in my marketing agency, I'm working with some financial planners. I have people who are writing their first book and walking them through that process. And then there are also some speakers. So people who have expertise in a domain and are going, I need to tell people about this using social media, but I just don't know how to do it, or I'm afraid. I would never probably say that out loud, but I'm afraid to do it wrong and have people laugh at me. And so I've been able to come alongside some of those people and walk with them through that and say, here's who you're writing to. Here's actually what makes you incredible, because I find a lot of people are afraid to say the things that they have done. And be honest about that, whether that's because people will think they're arrogant or judge them or whatever the things are. And I think that is the thing where when people have done really incredible things or they do great work, I'm like, we need to shout this from the rooftops. Like, what are we, why are we not doing that? And then the other thing, which I did really write this specifically to young men. Now, I have men that are in their 40s and 60s and even a woman in her 70s who read this and my newsletter every single week and go, this is amazing for people of all ages. So it's not exclusionary to other people, but I am writing to my younger, to a young man whose name is Andre, specifically in my newsletter. If you read my newsletter, it comes out every Saturday, and you can actually get it at juststartbook.com. But in that newsletter, I start every one of them that says, "Dear Andre." And it's because I'm writing to a 24-year-old who wants to start a business, wants to travel the world, wants to meet and marry the girl of his dreams, but hasn't done those things yet. And so I'm actually reverse engineering what are the skills, different skill sets that I've developed up until this point that I needed at 24. And I'm going like, these last few weeks, I've been writing about enthusiasm and the value of it, that most people live at like this kind of baseline, kind of like what you were saying. But if you can start at a quote baseline of 8 out of 10, and then know in key moments, whether that's a job interview, going on a date with a girl, an investor relation, something like that, where you know, oh, I need just that little bit more, mm-hmm. that little bit of extra, I can turn it up to 10 if I need to. And so that idea of developing enthusiasm, like that's something that I'm writing about right now, because I see the value of it, that people want to do business and do life with people that are excited about. And one of the questions, whenever I meet someone, I often, instead of asking, what do you do? I will ask them, what are you most excited about in your career, your family? Is there a project that you're working on? Such a different response than if you ask someone, what do you do for work? Mm-hmm. What are you excited about versus what do you do for work? Hugely different, because now I know what's bringing life to them. Mm-hmm. If they just had their second child and they're super excited about that and watching him or her, like that's a different, now I know something that I didn't know that was important.
And that's a better conversation. I mean, not everybody wants to talk about their work.
Sure.
And typically, yes, people are, most of America is somewhat satisfied with their work. Entrepreneurs generally are very excited about what they're working on, but a lot of people are like, it's just a job, dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm looking at chapter one, and it's about someday, mm-hmm. right? And to me, that resonates. I had a Marxism quote several years ago. You know, there are 7 days a week. Someday isn't one of them. I had heard that somewhere and started repeating it. But I feel like it is easy to procrastinate. Tell me about this chapter and why it's chapter one of the book.
Yeah, I think the biggest reason why it's chapter one is because I saw so many young men that I know, and myself when I was younger, going, when I have the job or have the business, then I will go travel the world. Mm-hmm. When I, there was always a later, it will be easier. And I started with that because I want to go, that is not true. Actually, when you're in your 20s, especially your early 20s, and you are single and you aren't established in a specific career, that is the easiest time to take risks, to start businesses, to travel. And a part of that is I went and lived in Ecuador for 77 days at 24. And that was the reason why this book exists today. Mm-hmm. And because while I was there halfway through, what they don't tell you as a young person who achieves a dream that they've thought about for 7 years, is now all of a sudden you're like, what's next? Which maybe you experienced that a little bit when you sold your companies and you're going like, oh no, I like did the thing. Has my life peaked? That's what I felt at 24. Mm-hmm. And obviously there wasn't like a monetary outcome necessarily for me at that time, but I was going, this is something I've always wanted. From 17 until 24, I had thought about doing that. So that's a quarter of my life. Significant period of time to want something and then to have it, and then the fear of going, has my life peaked?
Yeah.
And out of that, I went, I have to create a new dream, because if I don't, it's so easy to go, this is it, this is sort of the end, but I'm really just at the beginning. And so I wanted young men in particular to recognize that their drive and their ambition to create things is not for later, it's for today. And I think when that's channeled into businesses, into creating things that the community is better, families are built, businesses are built, and like at least in our area, the Sacramento area is improved when young men are not made to feel wrong for wanting to create incredible things, but are instead empowered and shown that it's possible. Because I think the most damaging thing is to have someone who loves to create and loves to build things and have someone be like, you should probably make sure you rest, like make sure you have balance. It's like some people, like for me, what looks like work to a lot of people is actually incredibly fun for me. Yeah. And so like to me, business is a game. And money is just it's on a scoreboard. And I go, hey, what is the scoreboard? Did I win in my business today? And that is so fun to me. And I think so many people are not in an environment where their work is fun and that their worlds are so interconnected. Like my personal and my business worlds are all interwoven in so many fun ways.
Yeah, if you're not doing a job that you absolutely love, then you should be doing something else. And but there is a compounding effect. I think it's interesting about starting young, taking your risks when you're young, because the lessons you learn, the money that you make, the experiences that you get, there's a compounding effect about if you are fully engaged.
Yeah.
If you are going through the motions or in something where you don't feel like you're gaining good experience, you're not taking advantage of the compounding effect.
Sure.
And so you think about doing those kind of things when you're young, how valuable will those be when you're my age? Because it's not just financial. It could be relationships. It could be almost anything, experience. There's a compounding effect to being committed.
Yeah. Well, and I think a part of what makes it so hard is, especially in your early 20s, everything feels like it's the end of the world. Like if I choose this career, it's forever. And if I choose wrong, I'm kind of effed. Mm-hmm. Like that's it.
Is that how you think young people think?
I think that's how I felt, especially okay. if you're like a driven, ambitious.
Is that how Andre feels?
Yes, it's exactly how he feels. And I think there is that, like, that's what stopped me from starting a business sooner.
Mm.
Was going, like I had someone who went, hey, you can go into the financial services. Like someone offered, well, I was still in college, offered me 50, 60 grand to start working for him. But I was like, I couldn't see it being a forever thing. And I didn't have the concept of, hey, I could do something for a few years and then change. Mm-hmm. And so I had that. I had someone else in real estate. And there were probably two or three different times where people would come to me and say, hey, you should do this thing. Here's this offer. And I would go, but I probably won't do it forever. So I'm going to say no.
Interesting.
And so I actually had, now that I look back, I had opportunities to say yes to things sooner than I actually did. But because I was afraid that I was going to choose the wrong thing, I would say no to protect myself from being wrong in the future. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that holds so many people back, going, if I invest all of this into this thing and then I change my mind, now there's the sunk cost mm-hmm. fallacy of like, yes. can I remove myself from this thing?
One of the things that I did when I was, let's call it, in between jobs is I wrote a mission statement. And that it's general, but it's around creating opportunity for my family, friends, and community. And as they succeed, I succeed. But it's general. What does that mean? At least it's a direction to start taking a step. So one thing that I would suggest to anybody is consider a personal mission statement that at least get you moving in a direction, and then you can start making the decisions. Are these decisions aligned with my overall mission? And I think that can be really effective in getting us off our butts.
Yeah. What is your personal mission
statement? Yeah. With future generations in mind, I will help create opportunity for my family, my friends, and my community. And as they succeed, I succeed. And that mission statement is, it's tattooed to my soul. Mm. I wrote it at a time when I really didn't know what direction I was going to take in my life. And then that mission statement, it at least gave me a direction, like a guiding light. I didn't go start the podcast.
How old were you when you...
I was 46, 47. I had just sold my companies. Okay. I felt too young to retire. But I didn't know direction, but I really enjoyed creating opportunity in my businesses for other people.
Sure.
And so how could I do that more and more. And so I sort of stumbled my way into venture capital and angel investing and venture capital. And this podcast was really what led to that. I didn't know quite what I was going to do until starting the podcast, then began making some angel investments. And now I'm, you know, we have a venture capital firm.
And did the angel investments come from conversations you had on the podcast?
Yes. Yeah. The first one was... this young man, Jordan Darling, and he has started a jet ski company. And so I got introduced to this young man who's started an electric jet ski company. And he ended up wanting to talk about coming on the show. And we, I said, you want to meet at my office, your office, or on the water? Well, we went out to, on the water, and I rode his jet ski. And I'm like, are you taking investors? And he's like, actually, I am. And so I invested into his company, and it succeeded. Luckily, he did well. And so that got me, I got the bug. And it's like, oh, I can create, help create opportunity, help people start things by making small investments in the in their career.
Wow.
So it was fun.
Yeah, it seems like there's such an interest in connecting with people and making sure that those around you are succeeding. And before, I guess I'm curious because I think there's a lot of people, a lot of younger people that aren't on the other side of a major exit, that how did you do that all along the way and it was just magnified once you were at the point where you were going, okay, now I don't have to worry about myself so much? Or, and was there a switch there once kind of some of the monetary stuff was figured out, or were you doing that all along the way?
So what happened with me, because anybody who's building a business, you're going to be somewhat cash strapped. Sure. And our businesses grew pretty rapidly. And so that...
And this is the security, this or was
security,
this the video?
Yeah, okay. This is security. Video stores grew rapidly, and then security cameras grew rapidly after that. And when you... I hired my video, or excuse me, my video store people to work in the security camera business. And that business ended up growing very, very rapidly. But what I saw happen was opportunity was created because we were a growing business. That's the interesting thing. When you go from 10 or 15 employees to 300, you know, people end up finding good opportunity within the company to be a manager, to manage a branch, or to lead a group of people and make more money and buy houses and become millionaires. Those kind of things happen when you're building a growing business. And so it's like, wow, I want to help. That was really rewarding for me to see other people succeeding within our business. And it was the, you know, my purpose statement is opportunity through commitment. So I want to create opportunity for the people who are most committed, because and to me that's really the rewarding part, is when people are all in, fully invested in what they want to do, I really want to help that person. It gives me more gratification out of doing that than giving to 10 bucks to somebody on the street that's homeless. I get much more satisfaction out of helping somebody who's on track and driven. And it's just my, it's my makeup. It's just the way that I am. I see that as money well invested.
Wow.
Or time well invested.
And you said commitment and opportunity. Can you say that line?
Yeah, opportunity through commitment.
Opportunity.
To me, I wanted to have that be kind of a guiding principle. And I call it my purpose. So that's why I'm doing it, right? It's like I want to help the most committed people to get what they want out of life. And so I think when I met you, I felt that as well. It's interesting how certain people sort of stand out in that realm. And I want to help those kind of people because I know they're going somewhere. It's like, that's a good investment for me. And I use that same approach in venture capital when we invest into companies. This Jordan Darling, he was 23. He had never even sold a jet ski yet. He had built a jet ski, moved to, from New York to Sacramento to build a jet ski company. So we met out at Folsom Lake on his prototype jet ski, and it was hard for me to ride as like a, some stand-up jet ski. And I'd never done that before. But I had a blast. I'm like, this kid is going to make it. And so I really invest into people. And now we're in Growth Factory, we're investing predominantly into tech companies. But I think investing in people is, it always makes you feel good.
That's awesome, Mark. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, appreciate it. You're good. Thanks for throwing that question at me. Okay, so thinking about things that would keep us from starting something, I have this mantra, ditch the doubters, right? There are people in our life, we all have had them, maybe we have them now, of people who have set an expectation of you of doing one thing, maybe playing it safe. It might be just sort of have put these like expectations on you. And so if you dream big and have this wild expectation of yourself, that, you know, there are people that will smirk or maybe not have the belief that you can do it, and they weigh on you. And I think getting those people out of your life or compartmentalizing them is really, really important. How do you share with people on how to deal with relationships that maybe might have a tendency to drag them down? What would you tell Andre about his mom that thinks he should be a, you know, maybe a work for the state, and he wants to go build a dream of building a great business, but his mom's saying play it safe.
Yeah, there is a tension in me where I think my tendency is to go, there kind of has to be some sort of like, at least for me in my life, there was a deadline where when I think about what Andre needs to do, is there needs to be a definitive time where it's like, hey, I need to have an income producing business by, and there needs to be a certain time. Mm-hmm. For in my own world, it was, I needed to have an income producing business by the time I graduated from college. And so what happened was 6 months before I was going to graduate, I started a detailing business because all of a sudden I had this pressure of, here's this thing. I knew that detailing is probably not the thing I will do for the rest of my life. But I knew if I didn't start something now, I would not have the ability to not get a job on the other side of this. Mm-hmm. And so in some way, if Andre can manufacture a deadline and going, it doesn't have to be the perfect choice. Doesn't have to be the perfect business, but start something and continue to make progress towards it. I think that's the most important thing. And coming back to people, such a big part of my journey has actually been that people have believed in me immensely. And I think you have two sides. You have some people who have no one who believes in them. And then you also have this other group of people, which I was a part of, where everyone is like, you're going to be amazing. You're going to do great things. Like, you're going to be the president. And being a perfectionist, I'm like, if I need to be perfect and everyone expects me to like take over the entire world, and I like can't even figure out which business to start, like I'm failing before I even begin. And so for me, there was this, and I think Andre experienced this as well, where it's going, that's why the idea of just starting is so powerful, because the just is there, which acknowledges the fear, acknowledges that people are going to say things, whether it goes well or it goes terribly. And for in that context, the other thing that I've done for years, and that I there's actually a chapter called Rich Relationships. I believe it's chapter, where is it?
It's chapter four.
Chapter four. There it is.
I went to the table of contents.
Yeah, you're smarter. You're smarter than I am. And in that chapter, one of the things that I talk about to some degree is going through and recognizing who are people who improve you in a specific area. And actually, there's this thing which I haven't talked about a whole ton publicly, but there's this idea of doing what's called an association audit. Mm-hmm. Where actually in every area of my life, I go through it and I ask myself, who do I see at least once a month, or do I talk to in some capacity once per month in all of the geographical places that I'm in? So when I was younger, I was in school, at my work, with my family, at my church, at the gym, all these different places. There are people that I would see. And then over time, what I would do is I would look at, who are people that when I hang out with them, I have more hope, I have more energy, I have more enthusiasm. The dreams that I like or businesses that I'm thinking about, they actually move forward. And are there places or people that when I go there, I go, wow, I have terrible energy after I meet with that person. And there's grace, like sometimes people just have a bad day and that's fine. But if every single time I meet with you, I find out that I don't want to go after my dreams, or I'm feeling less hope or less possibility for the future, I just note that mentally. And it's not that I just cut them out of my life and never talk with them again. It's a, I will just be around them. If I used to see them every month, now I'll just only be available once every other month. And I will just kind of create a little bit of distance to where, and the thing is if you do it correctly and with always walking with grace and compassion towards them, and a part of that is you never know at what point something can change for them, and all of a sudden they can be an incredibly life-giving relationship. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes people are just going through things that they're not willing to share with you, and you don't know if they're mom just passed away from cancer, or they're going through a divorce, or whatever the things are, because there's a lot of life that's happening that people just don't put on Instagram for the world to know.
Yeah.
And so that's a big, so it's nuanced to some degree, but then there's also, I was aware enough of going into these environments and actually thinking through and going, hey, as much as I enjoy hanging out with this person, I don't see any fruit in my life from our time together. And at some point, if I can't identify, and it can be my faith grows in my spiritual world, it can be I think more clearly, it can be my, like, we work out together, so my physical health is better, it can be financially, they either have ideas or have deals or have, like, in some capacity that actually leads to money in some way. But I am kind of quantifying and going, is there a way that this relationship builds in some capacity? And for me, I'm always looking to be someone to serve and to give in a similar way to, it sounds like, to you. Even earlier today, I was at Lifetime, and there was this guy who I had met one time who owns Betty's, which is Betty's Wine Bar and Bistro. There it is. And I met this other friend of mine who's named Luke, and he actually imports wine from Argentina. And I had met Drew one time, and I had just talked with Luke, and I went, they need to meet, but I had no way to contact Drew. And then I saw him today at the gym, and I was like, I have someone for you. And I literally was able, like, I already sent the 3-way text.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
And so that's like a small thing where it's like, what do I gain out of that? Nothing.
You engineered a win for those two.
And if Drew ends up having this amazing Argentinian wine that he never would have got, like, that makes Sacramento better. Like, I get a tremendous amount of satisfaction from being the person who introduced, like, it's just fun for me. And for whatever reason, the way my brain is engineered, I can, like, remember, even though I only met this person one time, like, 3 months ago, I still, as soon as I met Luke, I went, that person. When I meet him again, that is, like, a very helpful. So I'm kind of always going, how do I understand what's important to someone and build that in my brain as almost like this mental puzzle piece? And then when I meet the other person that's like the pieces coming together, I go, yes.
Interesting.
Like, this is fun for me. It's so,
I love that.
But that's a little bit of how I
am. And you're obviously good with people and you're a connector. I'm sort of curious where that came from, because not everybody is built like that. And I've never heard it framed as a mental puzzle piece that you're trying to connect. That starts with being a good listener, I believe, because when you can understand, if I can understand what you're passionate about, if you understand what I'm passionate about, now all of a sudden you're very well positioned to put the puzzle pieces together.
Yeah, it does take, yeah. I think there's two components. One was when I was really young, I would, as a middle schooler, I would walk into a setting and I would see the kid who was sitting by themselves, and I would go, I know that I can go and just, like, sit beside them and have a great conversation with them. And so there was always this part of me that wanted to include people. And I think a part of that is there were many times in my life where I felt like an outsider. And I went, I know what it's like to be on the outside. If I can give others the gift of feeling like they're included and on the inside, it actually doesn't cost me that much to do that. And it's tremendously valuable. So that's one aspect of it. The other thing was, it was modeled for me really, really well in a way that I just didn't know was possible. There's a great friend of mine named Adam, and he showed me that it is possible to listen this well. And I never, we went on this hike that was really for founders and entrepreneurs. And there was this group of 20 different guys who were all there. And he stood in the center of that circle and went around and introduced each of them by name, what their business was. If there was another person in the group who he thought they should connect with, he went, hey, you and you, you guys should meet. And went around, said each of them by name. And I'm going, okay, 20 people showed up. How many people realistically did he invite? Probably 40, 50, 80. Like, I don't know how many people he invited, but if you do any sort of an event, you know you have to invite way more people than actually show up. So to have 20 people, know all of them by name, and afterwards I was like, how did you do that? Like, that seemed like magic.
That is amazing.
And he went, every time I meet someone, and I was like, what was your system? Did you have? He's like, I don't really have a system. This is actually like when I meet someone, I really care and I listen. And I realized it through conversations with him. He has an intensity in the way that he listens, not in like a weird, creepy way, but in just like this is the most important moment. Mm-hmm. And that is a gift that I think so few people experience, is having someone who's so present that it's almost uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That's just like a rare gift in our very distracted world. And in that presence, what happened was he listened well enough to where he would know what I needed and then would invite me to things, would send things that made him think of me. And so I have taken that and turned that around and went, this is something that right now I'm like an amateur at, and he's a professional, and you got to play at single A and double A and triple A before you hit the majors. Mm-hmm. And so I have done my best, and it's imperfect. I don't have a perfect memory. I don't remember everything about everyone, but it can be as simple as like, today I listened to a band that I really liked and I went, oh, my dad always loves these types of things. And I just sent him a YouTube video. And that's a small thing, but I try whenever I watch something that reminds me of someone, or I hear something where the connection would make sense, I just go, hey, I thought of you when I heard this. And people love that.
And if you are in sales, my friends, this is a great sales technique for building relationships. Hmm. Because if you're selling security cameras, we don't have to just talk about the cameras and the specs and the, how they're going to keep an eye on everybody. If you can get to know people and what they're passionate about, even if it's just a buyer on the other end of the line, or somebody you're having lunch with and you want to sell them something. But getting to know them personally and what makes them tick beyond, what you're trying to sell, sure, it's so important to be a great listener. And I find that the people who can ask the best follow-up questions, they end up becoming the most engaging, they end up becoming the most engaged. It's follow-up questions, because you got to dig deeper a little bit, because a lot of times people give you the surface questions.
Well, and that's why surface answers. That first question also matters, like of what are you most excited about versus what you do for work, as an example. Like it already cuts deeper just by the nature of the question. And just out of curiosity, what are the best follow-up questions,
I think, in your opinion? In my opinion, it's part of how they react. If I said to you, I like to ask the question, what are you working on? How can I help? And, I'm saying I want to help engineering win if I ask that question.
Yeah.
But I think we could even use your question, which is better. And it's more like, what are you most excited about right now? And then listen for what that is. And you have a follow-up. If it's their kids, then it's a follow-up question about the kids. What are they doing? What part of it? Wow. Have you done this? Maybe experience, share a little bit. But next thing you know, you're having a more meaningful conversation about what they care about most. And you're asking questions from a true curiosity standpoint, and it gets them to open up.
Yeah. Well, and I think I created this free resource in addition to, it's at the very end of my book, but also if you just DM me on Instagram book, I'll send you this. It's my top 5 favorite books. Something that you said, The first one is How to Win Friends and Influence People. The second one is Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. And the third one is Unreasonable Hospitality by Chris Gadara. Mm-hmm. And one thing that you said that connects with Unreasonable Hospitality he talks about in that book how it's cool to care. Mm-hmm. And you had talked about earlier how if people really want to go for something or they really want to try something, and there is this stigma of like, don't try too hard. Because what? We like actually care about the outcome?
Yeah, that's uncool.
Like,
yeah.
But there's something about that of going, no, I really do care. And I'm okay with like, even as simple as the way that I dress, I do care about the way that I present myself. And as a straight guy, 10 years ago, that was weird. Whereas now it's a little bit more accepted to just be like, no, you want to dress well, like that's okay. But there was a point where it was like not cool to do that. And I think to have, like, I love that there's people like Will, like you, that are going, hey, it's okay to drive, to have ambition. And I think there's a freedom that I both feel because of the things that I have created in my life and that I want to give as the gift to other young men to say, it is okay to be driven. It is okay to have ambition and to go, I want to do some incredible things in my life. And they may not happen overnight, and it's okay to still want that.
Yeah. I love that, by the way. I say it's okay to be great all the time to the people I coach on the football field or in entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we want to blend in because we have this fear of standing out. And, you know, the people that are different get recognized, get noticed.
Sure.
And, you know, I have an exercise that I will do on, and I think you can do it on a small goal, a big goal, on a hospitality idea. I want to have great I want to have the best hospitality. I want to achieve this goal. I call it the everything possible exercise. And basically what you do is let's call it a small goal. Like I want to win over Mark Haney because I'm coming on his show. And I'm like sitting here, what should I do? And you can make a list of things to do. I should listen to some of his podcasts. I should figure out what he cares about. And you did that coming in. But you could take that to the extreme. You could start ChatGPTing, like, what should I do? You could be an employee and I want to get a promotion. What should I do? ChatGPT it. Or my exercise is this, though. Pretend that your goal is that you're going to become an instant billionaire when you reach the goal. Just picture you're going to be bathing in $1 billion, right? Picture that. Okay, can you picture that? Yeah, oh man, well, that would be so awesome. Okay. Now, if I would do everything possible to get that $1 billion, if all I had to do was win over Mark Haney and he was going to give me $1 billion, I don't have it, by the way. It takes that effort to the extreme, right? I want to get my promotion. Okay. And but the promotion means I'm going to become a billionaire. Okay. Wow. What would I do? Okay. I would be there an hour early. I would prep for the first call of the day. I would be rehearsed. I would be last guy to leave at the job. All the different things that you could do to be the best on that day and every day. And you make a list and you just start working that system. You can do that with becoming, world-class hospitality, getting a promotion, anything that you want to do that might seem sort of mundane or normal goals. Treat it like it's everything.
Huh. So it seems like you're almost taking this, like I've heard Alex Ramosi, who I'm actually being coached by, talk about how, like, if someone has a child, if someone said, if you can't do this in 30 days or someone kills your child, mm-hmm. like, could you find a way to do it? Which is like a very extreme.
I used to say, you have a gun to your head. If you don't get this, you die.
Yeah.
And that's a little less. That's actually what I do. Okay. I know that my brother and I used to do that when we were dreaming up ideas on how to build our businesses. Let's do the gun to the head exercise, right? Yeah. Everything possible exercise. Huh. And if you do it with a partner, it's really helpful because then you can do it with multiple partners and it can be almost like a sounding board. We're going to do everything humanly possible, or we're out of business, or, gun to your head, or it's $1 billion is a more positive way of thinking of it. But if you do that, and and you brainstorm the crap out of it. Yeah. And then you come up with the top 10 things you can do, because you can't do everything possible. Mm. You end up doing the best things that are more possible and practical. And it really is effective. And just advancing the ball. And sometimes you won't get it. You won't reach the goal, but at least you did try it.
Did everything possible. Yeah.
You died trying, right?
Huh.
So.
Yeah. When has there been a time where you've done that, either in your security business or even post, that you found like, wow, that was incredibly effective?
Oh, without question. Just we started a manufacturing company. Uh-huh. And it was like, what are we... you want to do everything possible. Well, you want to have the best leader. You want to have the best possible person leading that. Mm-hmm. And we did that brainstorming session as to how are you going to make that thing work? And, it's basically a way to idea generate. Mm. So, and a dry erase board comes in handy, or some kind of notepad.
I bet you're recording it into ChatGPT and then asking it for...
Now that's what you do, is you could just keep going back and forth. Well, what other ideas do you have? Yeah. What other ideas do you have? Because this ChatGPT is great for idea generation now.
Yeah.
So you could use your everything possible or gun to the head exercise with ChatGPT, and you're going to have a bunch of good ideas, and then you'll kind of sift through them and pick out the ones that you can do tomorrow.
Yeah. Huh. That's super powerful. I like that.
Yeah. Okay, so we have a few minutes left. Let me just give you the closing thoughts. Why don't you give me now that you've written the book, what it feels like and the reaction you're getting, and then maybe just some more words of wisdom for our audience to end on.
Yeah. I think the thing that they don't tell you about writing a book or achieving any dream is that there's always fallout, which is that once you've achieved the thing that you thought, now I will be a different type of person, it is so important to have a next dream after that one's accomplished. And I see you nodding. Because there's this idea of if it's almost like you're swinging from a tree holding onto a rope, if it's attached to the tree you're already at, you're not moving forward. But if there's a future dream that you're attached to, now all of a sudden you're going to be moving forward, and there can be this, the thing that, especially if this is a young person, there's this idea of a push and pull of going, it's okay if you're young and someone has said, you're never going to make it, like, I don't believe in you, or a teacher was like, you'll never, whatever. It's okay to have these negative things and let them push you. Mm. There's also tremendous power in saying, what do I want to create? What contribution do I want to make to this world? And how do I allow that to pull me into a better future? And that's the thing that I am consciously creating. And here's the thing. It's so much more work to create the positive vision than it is to find the negative in the past to push you. So I will warn you, it is way more work, and it creates a way more beautiful world, and it creates a kinder internal world that's just way more fun to live in, as I've experienced. So that would be the thing, is to create, even if it's not a perfect vision of your future, but saying, what are the things that I have? What are the gifts that I've been given? What's the story that I have up until this point? And how do I say, I don't have to have all the answers. I simply need to say, if someone is one step behind where I am today, I have complete permission to help them go from where they are to where I am now. They may be able to get past me, and then I'm less useful. But I know exactly how to go from where I was to where I am now. And to say, well, I have to be 3 more steps before I can help them. Dude, they're drowning right now. Help them.
Mm-hmm. Well, very powerful. Daniel Barnes, he is the author of Just Start. He also owns Barnes Detailing. And he's somebody that I think you want to know. I mean, if you listen to this, I'm sure you were inspired. And I know I am. And it's really good to have your leadership in our community. So thank you.
Thanks for having me, Mark. This is super fun.
and to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you, we're never below you, always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.